Hello, everybody. Welcome to this broadcast of Alchemy of Light. I am Jamil Graham, and I am your host. And this broadcast is a celebration and exploration of consciousness because consciousness is where everything begins. It's our feelings and our thoughts, and where it manifests in the world is from deep within our consciousness first. And this show today is very special to me. This show is a celebration of life on so many levels. I am so pleased to welcome Calvin Lehu and Sto Shocky. They have co-authored a book called Flying High, which is a book that had a mind of its own, the kind I like the best. So I will like to share that this book. I'd like them to tell you about this book. Actually, let me just bring them in. Hello, Sto.
Hello, Jamil.
How are
Glad
you
to be here
today?
today.
Oh, great. It's nice to have you. And hello, Calvin.
Hello.
Welcome to the Alchemy of Light broadcast.
Thank you. This has
Thank
been a
you
long
for
time in the making, eh?
this show or this book or
Well,
both.
just getting together on this show, yeah.
Yeah, it was very exciting, this book and this show. I will share with the listeners that this book is a combination of Stowe being hired to author the story, the rich, incredible story of Calvin Lehu and his amazing life of fruitful manifestation as a entrepreneur who turned himself into a millionaire, creating many, many business projects and rolling them over while consistently bettering himself in the process. He has a love of flying. He's a quite accomplished pilot, a speaker, a preservationist. He has also, in my mind, become what I would call a free-spirited, independent thinker. You know, he learns his lessons and takes what he needs and leaves the rest and carries on his mission to further the mission of bettering humanity and bettering whatever he can around him. And his preservationist work is very exemplary of that, and the projects that he's taken on, as well as some outstanding projects in the community. I would really love to hear the story of the restoration of the Natchez Trace, for one example. And Stowe, a lovely being, a musician, a beloved mother, a very brave, brave soul, who has, in this process of authoring the book Flying High, faced some of the most profound demons and fears one could imagine in her cancer, and the cancer itself turning into a friend of hers, in a manner of speaking, giving her an opportunity to visit the quality of her life and really claim her life once again. And when I was reading this book, I couldn't put it down. This book is so rich with inspiration and heartfelt sharing, and it is such a beautiful combination of the wisdom and guidance of Calvin, who's also been a cancer person who's been through many, many things in his life, while Stowe is riding that horse and taking on that challenge of cancer and facing it. And it is such a great combination in this book because it is the story of how to manifest your dreams while Stowe is actually manifesting them. It is a really a very heartwarming and inspiring book. So please, I would love to, geez, where to begin? This book also has a caveat for me on a personal level in that I met both of these people through my mother, Juliet Nightingale. And she, I met Stowe as she was in the throes of the cancer, as just in the eve of my mother departing from cancer. So this book got all mixed up in so many incredible personal stories for me. So in a way, I think I will just pass it to who would like to start? Please tell us the story of the making of this book.
Well, I'll start. I love that saying that says, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Mm. And, you know, teachers come in all shapes and sizes. And for me, I was very fortunate to meet two of the greatest teachers of my life. And one was Calvin Lehue, who I met about, it's going on 4 years now, Calvin, that I met Calvin in Christmas of 2007. And through our journey together, Calvin has become a wonderful mentor and a great friend. And it was probably no coincidence that it was just about 4 months later that I met the second greatest teacher of my life, which was rectal cancer. Not such a welcome thing in my life at the time, you know, because it was very scary to face stage 3 rectal cancer. And but with Calvin's help and his wisdom, because we started writing the book. Well, it's probably about 7 or 8 months after we met that we began writing this book. But it was the process of writing about him and then trying to put his teachings to use in my life that brought about such great change in me. And, you know, he loves to fly. I'm afraid of heights. He has done incredible things using the power of thought and, you know, just manifesting what he wanted in his life. And I have more often than I would like to admit, I've been very fearful and not done all that I could do. But I'm here to say that things have changed for me because I'm committed now at this point in my life to not live in fear, to choose love over fear. So I don't know if that's a summary or not, but that's how I would like to start it.
That's fantastic. And Calvin, please share with us your beginning. What inspired you to seek out an author for your story?
Well, it started, let's see, where do I start? I was born and raised above our country store, and my father had a third grade education, my mother had a sixth grade education, and they wanted me to be the first Lehue to ever go to college, but that wasn't my goal. They died when I was a teenager, and they were friends of Senator and Mrs. Albert Gore, and when they died, they invited me to come to Washington. I was a page in the United States Senate, and I was always in, my mother had me in the church every day that the door was open and night, and so I got a lot of religious teachings, Methodist teachings, and I went to hear Dr. Norman Vincent Peale and talked about the power of positive thinking. That was great because I wanted to hear the positive teachings of Jesus, not the negative, which I'd been subjected to so much in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And that then, when I was around Washington, I got to know five presidents of the United States, three of them on a daily personal basis before they became president, Kennedy, Johnson, and Nixon. I wanted to know what makes people successful. Why do these guys, how do they get to be where they are? Wealth and so forth. So then Mrs. Gore asked me one day what I was going to do with my life. Well, I thought I was in pretty high heaven right there, and I didn't want to leave Washington. And I had to come up with something real quick, and I said, I guess I'm going to be a congressman. And she said, well and good, but you need to go back to the Tennessee and graduate. I was at George Washington University at the time. And so I didn't want to, but I went back. And while I'm there, I realized I don't want to be a congressman. I want my freedom. And what else? Okay, what else? What do I want? What is? Oh, and by the way, before that, my fraternity brought me a 78 RPM called Lead the Field by Earl Nightingale. And he said, if you set a goal, believed in it, had faith, and act, you could do, be, and have anything you desired. So I had to come up with something then. I thought, well, what is it? Money. If I could just have enough money, that would solve all my problems. While I'm in college there, I majored in economics, but I also took some electives in psychology and philosophy. And they both were about the mind. Psychology and philosophy was, I just really enjoyed this. And more, I am getting the teachings about all about the mind, and I'm mixing religion in there, Nightingale, Clement Stone, Napoleon Hill. I start reading this. And so I set my goal to be a millionaire at age 35. That's what the book says. That's what all the teachings about goal setting and so forth, visualizing yourself there. And my fraternity brother and I went down to Tallahassee, Florida, to open up a restaurant, which did not work out. We were there at Florida. We were there in Tallahassee in 1963, and we said, "What does this place need? It doesn't have a discount drugstore. Let's open up one just like that." I mean, that's crazy, but I didn't have parents to tell me how crazy I was. And one of the things I've learned, the law of the universe, is in order to receive, you've got to give. And that goes with everything. Love, you want love, you got to give love. You want money, you've got to give a product or service. So we opened up our first store, rented on the corner of College and Adams, and we discounted every item every day at least 20% as a normal merchandise markup of 40%. So we had to make twice as many sales to come up with the same profit as our competition. And when we did that, that was so unusual. We not only sold twice as much in sales, we sold 3, 4, and 5. And our Florida State was there, and the Capitol, and I mean, it was just a great place. And we opened our second store in Albany, Georgia, then Dothan, Alabama, Gainesville, Florida. And the point of my story is we had problems, but we overcame them. We kept a positive attitude. This stuff really works. So I sold out and got in real estate. And then I set my goal to do some more things along real estate lines. I became the millionaire at 33, not 35. And I wasn't any happier. I realized money does not make me happy, although I still even wanted more, but I had owed millions and had real estate things and taxes and so forth. But I was interested in these principles. These principles is what fascinated me. So that's kind of the beginning, and I'll stop right here. And if you got another question, I will continue on telling you about some of the other victories. But I've talked long enough here right now.
Bless your heart, Calvin. I really appreciate the innocence and the determination of your character. You know, what you faced as a teenager, and this is in the book, Flying High, in the beginning, you know, it gives detail of facing the transitioning of both of your parents within, 6 months, and then your dog.
Oh, yeah.
And to have that as a teenager was now maybe one of your greatest gifts, but to have that in those really tender years and then to find out that you actually had a life anyway and just to set out about it. And the story is very rich, and it's really a good story to know. And yeah, we could listen. We have an hour, so let's carry on a little. We'll come back to that. I would like to pass it to Stowe. And this is a fun thing in the book too. On Stowe's chapters, there's a cool little guitar. And when she's talking about Calvin, there's a cool airplane. It's really fun. Mm-hmm, okay, yeah. So now we'll have the guitar. And so when you are, I would like you to please share with us, and this segues a lot with Calvin's stories, no doubt, and how you face the fear and push through it. Because if we're going to bottom line creation, one level of it is simply getting over ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say, Jamil, it's an ongoing process. You know, each one of us, bombarded with fear-based messages on a daily basis. I mean, if you listen to the news at all, that's where it's pointed. And, you know, we always are being warned to, you know, to prepare for the worst, and this terrible thing just happened, and what if something else like it happens? So it's like, and then you've got your own messages that you give yourself. And I had read not too long ago that the beliefs about ourselves are basically formed by the time we are 3 years old. So, you know, depending on how your parents saw you, how they treated you, you know, what their background was, that's how you believe about yourself. And so for me, I was born into a family that was on the verge of a huge crisis. My mother was diagnosed with cancer just a few months after my birth and was immediately taken to another city to have a mastectomy and radiation treatments. And, you know, this left my father in a very, you know, frustrated, you know, terrible place. He also had a son who was about three at the time, who was completely deaf. That's my brother. And then me, a baby. And so he was, you know, as the leader of our family, he was just, you know, in a crisis mode. And a lot of anger, and my brother was very frustrated and angry himself. So that was what I was steeped in for the first 3 years of my life, and it was just ongoing drama with my mother's health, and which she eventually died when I was three, and she was only 34. And so my life kind of went, I hate to say it, but it kind of went downhill from there for many years of my life. But those first 3 years steeped me in fear. And I didn't know that for so much. I mean, I've done a lot in my life. I've overcome a lot. But I didn't realize that my subconscious had that kind of fear message in it. And so I couldn't understand why I was so critical of myself, why I sabotaged a lot of my efforts. And I believe possibly I was afraid not just to fail, but to succeed. And when I got cancer, I spent a lot of time in a quiet place, you know, really pursuing stillness and trying to hear the voice of God in my life. What should I do? You know, I had a lot of questions. You know, I really, a lot of people ask, why me? Why do I get this terrible thing happening to me? I didn't do that. I was, you know, I was asking more, how can I get through this? What treatment should I use? I was really dead set against doing medical treatments because of, I believe, what I saw my mother go through when I was a child. And also, I had a foster brother as a teenager who also died of cancer and had a lot of treatments that were, in my mind, you know, horrendous. And so I was so against medical treatment. Anyway, with all this fear in my life, I sabotaged so much of my efforts. I'm a singer, songwriter. It's a creative place to be. I love being there. But through the years, I think I've only let myself go so far with it. And I always call it was just kind of like a dance where I was going two steps forward or one step forward, two steps back. But as I say, with the cancer and becoming more still, I began to get songs that came to me. One of my first songs that I really loved, it was kind of a new, different sound, was a song called Wake Up. And it was the message in it was, you know, to be who I was meant to be. So as I came very close to death during the writing of the book, I wasn't afraid to die, but I did come to the realization that I had been afraid to live. This was a big thing. So when I finally submitted to doing surgery, I I don't know, I didn't want to do the surgery for so long, but when I finally did it and it saved my life, it was amazing to me how it was like they cut that cancer out, and they also had to take out my rectum. It was amazing to me that it was like they cut out a lot of garbage from me, fear. Mm-hmm. And I came out of the surgery just on fire to do what it was I was born to do. And I just have that, you know, I love that expression that says, feel the fear and do it anyway. Well, I'm still mm-hmm. afraid to do things like speak on the radio or go on stage and do all these kind of things. But I'm just doing it anyway, because what else is there to do but what I was born to do, you know?
Yes, duh.
You know, it's like we only have a certain amount of time here. You know, if you have a gift, and you know that you have that gift, and only you're the only person who can do that special thing that this world needs and that you need to do, you need to express, then it's only right to go out there and do it, you know?
Absolutely.
And Calvin can talk about that. He has kind of a 7 steps to achievement, and I believe that is so important and kind of like the blueprint for how to do what you want to do.
Mm. Yeah, I wanted, after studying this and having success after another, I sold one of my developments and wanted to go out to California, because this seemed to be where a lot of the different religions and so forth. I wanted to get the common denominator of success. I wanted to do firewalking. I'd heard of Tony Robbins' teachings there, and so I could not believe the mind is that powerful that it can walk across. You could walk across hot, burning coals and not burn your feet. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, to this day, is just amazing that our mind is that powerful. I did it. Mm. So I was out there at the Institute of Noetic Science, the Church of Religious Science. I studied the different religions and spent about 2-3 years out there, lived in La Jolla, had a nice home there. And so after all of this and studying and so forth, I came up with these 7 steps to success, what my common denominators are. Different words mean different things to different people sometimes, but I'll start off with the first one, and that's desire. We have to have a desire if we want to go from point A to point B. So if you want something, then see the image of that which you want. See yourself there now, in the present form, not in the future. The future never comes. Not in the past, but now. See yourself there. And also, goal is the third. Set it as a goal to be whatever you want to be. Some of this overlaps, of course. And then next, faith and belief. This is, you see a lot, hear a lot of this in the Bible. According to your faith, is it done unto you? And I might add here that a lot of the teachings in the Bible, what Jesus was teaching, is so true today, especially in business. Give to receive, faith, belief, according to your faith and belief, is it done unto you? And then the next one is probably the most important one that stops 90% of the people going up the ladder of success. They stop here, and that's ACT, A-C-T. Never taking the action. People are fearful of, they have fear. They are, don't want to get out of their comfort zone. I've seen over and over women especially stay in horrible marriages because it's more comfortable to stay in a horrible relationship than to go out and get in another one. People just really have a problem with taking action, going for, you know, quitting the job and going for a new one, asking for the loan at the bank, and so forth. That's one of the biggies. The next one, next to the last, is give. I've touched on that. You've got to give in order to receive a product or a service in business, and that's important. The last one there, the 7th step to success, is receive. If you don't have a good self-image, you may not, you may, or if you don't feel worthy, then you don't, you won't receive. You'll sabotage yourself. Forgiveness comes in here. If you have not forgiven yourself for something deep down, your subconscious and so forth, this is why it's important to have a good self-image and to receive the gift that you are due. So those are the seven steps, and I'll go over them one more time. The letter. Desire is the first one. Image, goal, faith and belief, act, give, and receive. Those are the seven steps that I have come up with in my 40 years of studying all of this to chronologize what I have done in my successes.
I really appreciate that, and I also find that the book and in your sharing, there's a great deal of reference to Bible passages, and what I really respect about that is that you both have, in my opinion, found the true meaning of what any text to truly enlighten one should do, and that is to inspire and empower and to teach and to guide. And you both have a religious upbringing, and I'll just acknowledge both of you for taking those lemons, because I think we can openly address the fact that, I mean, religion is one of the greatest teachers of fear out there, and you both have taken that on and gone straight into the Bible and said, well, all right, but look, it says this and it says that, and actually I am a worthy human being, and actually I do deserve this, so I think I'll take those passages, thank you very much. And I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
You know, yeah, it's very important, and I think it really speaks to the totality of our human story right now. I mean, are we going to make some lemonade here, you know? Are we going to just look at these lemons and go, wow, what are these lemons, you know? It's a very special opportunity to learn new ways to use our tools. And the Bibles and the many of the religious, all those religious texts, they're all our tools. And so put them to work. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And Calvin, would you please share a little bit? I would really love to hear your story about, if we could look at the Natchez Trace, because you have a long story of so many projects you've taken. Tennessee will be better for many years after you're transitioning for that. And the Natchez Trace is a very sacred place. It's a sacred, to me, and the short time I spent in Tennessee, it called me. I had to go to the Natchez Trace and made a special journey pilgrimage with Mother there one time, because it's such a sacred place. So in reading this book, I learned not only that was it an indigenous trail, and that there, you know, what I was feeling, I wasn't the only one, but you, Calvin, took it on to preserve that for the future. Would you please share with us how that became one of your goals, one of your desires, and how you acted to manifest that and allow the entire community to receive that as a gift?
Well, I accumulated money and materialism. I was on 14 board of directorships, and my ego was getting bigger and bigger, and I was accomplishing things that I wanted. And I might say that money and the ego did not bring satisfaction. You just wanted more and more. So I was into the physical so much, and then I started getting into the mental, and I felt like the spiritual was missing. So what we do is to start giving back. And so I started giving back to the community, and this was one of the things that I felt like that I could do, and I don't want to take much credit for the Natchez Trace Parkway. This was started, this revitalizing, doing the Natchez Trace Parkway by the Daughters of the American Revolution, whenever that was, and it was just a trail I never will forget, on my father's front porch of our store there in Hillsboro back then, it's called Leaper's Fork now, and Mr. Tommy Reese told me, he said, well, I said something about it. I said, I understand there's a Natchez Trace over there, and they're going to make a parkway maybe one of these days out of it. And he, in his pessimistic way, said, son, you'll never see the day when that's a parkway. And I think I was only about 6 or 7 years old, but he dropped some seeds in my mind that one day I would see that as a parkway. So when it came up in the Nashville, Tennessee area that there was going to be committees formed and so forth, and maybe that would be, the volunteers were asked. So I volunteered along with two or three others in Middle Tennessee, and we worked with Natchez, Mississippi, the three states. I became president of the three-state organization, and had my contacts in Washington, D.C. I don't like federal control and federal bureaucracy and government programs and so forth, but that's one that I did go and ask my friend, my senator and congressman, and I happened to, when I was in Washington, be Al Gore's babysitter there for a while. So I used what influence I could to get Parkway completed. And so I had Vice President Gore at the time to come down and in that big plane and then on by the helicopter, and we had a big ribbon cutting of the finalizing of the parkway there in close to Nashville. So it was just a great pride for me to be a part of that. And you're right. I'm glad that I did go out of my way to help get that. But thank you for asking.
Yeah, will you please share with the listeners what that is, the states it goes through, where it begins and ends, and the history that you know of it?
Well, it started out in Nashville, just outside of Nashville, and went through Nashville to Natchez, Mississippi. And it was a place, well, I will understand it as where the Indians used to trail. And then it was where the commerce, and it was a mail route, but a lot of shipping by the wagon trains and so forth down there. And then but when the steamboat was invented, this was where they could ride back and forth. So that stopped the traveling need then for going up and down the Natchez Trace Parkway. So it's been many things to many people and animals and so forth, a trail. So it is already a great parkway now, and it's just nice to have nature. We need more open spaces preserved. I just not long ago put my farm on the preservation land trust so that from now on, this 230 acres that's next to the city limits of my farm can never be developed, and we need more open spaces like this for the future generations of our country and nations.
Thank you for sharing that, and I quite agree. And Stowe, you are a mother. You have children. And I wonder how you see your influence in challenging your fears and being this example at their ages, and how you see what your contribution could be in passing on the wisdom that you have gained. And if you feel comfortable sharing a little bit of how your daughters have responded and how this may or may not have been an influence, a positive influence or not, in your family and them watching you go through this, because your children aren't that young, correct?
Right. Well, they're 14 and 16. And I do believe this whole experience has affected them, and that they have seen me go from someone who is highly critical of myself and my talents, you know, my gifts, whatever, before, and not really doing very much with them, you know, kind of just being maybe just a little fearful and just letting stuff go by. Life just went by me before. And now they see me really in the swing of things. They see me out singing. They know that I'm speaking out, and that I'm much happier now. I think, you know, I hope that it's a good example for them. I do encourage them as well in pursuing their gifts. I mean, there's always going to be little bits of fear that crop up, you know, when you try to do anything. Feel the fear and do it anyway, though. You know, it's like doesn't take any courage to sit on the sofa and watch television. But, you know, when you go out and pursue your dreams, I was just talking to one of my daughters earlier today about, she was saying she was afraid to be a mother, you know, that she might make mistakes or something. And I said, well, you know, there's no manual on how to be a mother, but I believe that you will do a wonderful job because you're a good person inside and out. And, you know, just do it with that faith that it's going to work out okay, like Calvin talks about. You know, believe in what you're doing, but visualize that your children are going to be raised in the way you want them to, and that you're going to have a partner, you know, to help you with it, that will be very helpful. So just put it out there as a vision and hold on to it and do it the way you like to do it.
Well, Calvin, I wonder if you could share with us if a specific example or a little trick, or both of you, either of you, would you share little tricks or wisdom of how to face fear? I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, just do it anyway, but, you know, when you're really in it, you know, is there a little thing you've learned, a way of talking with yourself? Can you share how you actually even recognize when it's fear at the helm of your life? Is there any insight that you, either one, would feel inclined to share? Because, you know, I think that we don't realize we're being controlled by fear. And then to navigate out of that is a whole nother story. You know, I feel like sometimes there's so much philosophy, right? We can say this, but then actually when you're in the dirt, you know, you've got a shovel and you need to, you know, learn how to use it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. I'm a student of overcoming fear. And you know what fear is? It's called false evidence appearing real. And we are fearful, especially from young childhood. We are fearful of the dark. We're fearful of so many things. And I was fearful, but the books and everything talked about overcoming fear. And the more fear things that I overcame, the easier it was for me to fear other things. Now, I'm not sure whether I should tell you this, because I lose credibility a lot of times, but I have lived through five. I build and fly experimental aircraft. I have lived through five major plane crashes. I've been life flighted to Vanderbilt University and so forth. And so I've had my share of going through a near-death experience and so forth. But I try to, my motto is, with every adversity, there is with it a seed of greatness. And that's so important. When we do have adversity and we face it, see the positive part of it. Face the fear. In fact, when I developed cancer, I never will forget, I went to the place at the hospital, and there were Kleenex boxes scattered around. And this nurse took me in the room, my wife and I, and she had this book, and she read to us about what the procedures were going to be going through and all. I was going to have to take the radiation treatments and all. I had prostate cancer. And so she was reading this, and then she was very serious, and she said, "Now, Mr. Lahue, what questions do you have?" And I tried to look at humor and everything, and I said, "What's for lunch?" And it just went over her head that she just didn't understand any humor in this. And in the waiting room, in the surgery room and so forth, I went through some surgery. I guess I was one of the first ones that just found humor in everything, even the radiation and all. I just listened to the beautiful music. I looked at the beautiful nurses. I never will forget. When one of the plane crashes, I thought, while the plane was tumbling, I can look at the positive in this and see all of this. So then when the plane quit and the medics came, and my wife said, "You won't believe how beautiful these nurses are." And I was in a neck brace, and I looked up, and I saw how beautiful they were. They put me on the helicopter there, the life flight, and gave me a morphine shot, which I didn't need. And I thought when the motor started cranking up, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. It was just like everything. I had no pain whatsoever. And so look for the fun in any adversity. Look for the humor. You can do this, and it just turns out great when you do that.
We live our entire lives in our mind, you know. Everything is through the eyes of our mind. I love that, what Mark Twain said, I'm paraphrasing, but he said something like, "I'm an old man and I've lived through many great tragedies, most of which never happened." I've often been afraid of going on stage because I'm afraid that I'm going to mess up and that people won't like me and they'll think my songs are bad and all this, you know, kind of silly stuff. And I guess what I'm having to do now to try to get over those voices are to just keep telling myself that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And I believe that if you repeat the positive messages to yourself enough, eventually you will override the negative voices that seek to destroy you with what I feel like they do. It's sort of like, you know, fear is like a dragon that must be slayed, you know.
Mm.
You must
push
through it. I know it sounds so simple to say that, but it's like, you know, sometimes there's something new comes up in my life, you know, maybe I could do this or that project. And my first instinct might be, no, I don't want to do that. Well, I've gotten to where now I ask myself, well, why don't you want to do that, Stowe? Is it because you're not interested in it? Or is it because you're afraid of something that could possibly go wrong? And if I find that I'm actually, if it's something I'm afraid of, then I do it. Because being afraid of it is not a reason to not do it.
Mm. Mm. That's brilliant. So to summarize, Stowe is suggesting that we question it. When we are hearing negation in our plan, we question it and find out a deeper meaning for what is behind that. And then if fear comes up, do it anyway, because fear is no longer an acceptable answer. And the commonality between the two answers is very much that this doesn't just happen overnight. This is a learned skill, that the more we empower and encourage, develop the positive mind, the more the positive mind grows, like a garden almost.
Yeah.
And then Calvin took us home with humor, Find mm-hmm. humor, find the fun, look for the light in the situation, find something to enjoy and find meaning and pleasure, even if it hurts. But there is something to celebrate in every experience we have. So that those are really very sound, grounded tools that we can use. Thank you very much, both of you, for that. And we are... fast coming, as the hours always just do. We've got a 10 minutes coming up here. We can go a little over if that flows as well. We have permission from the powers that be in the back of the house there. Mm-hmm. So you all both know. And I would like to continue the sharing a little bit from – we can pass it back to Calvin. And I would like you to share with us, Calvin, in your story, which is rich and long, what – if there is one particular thing that you've accomplished, what would it be that gave you the most meaning and fulfillment?
Oh, that's a great question. Let me think. Well, I'd say it started from early childhood. I never will forget. I had such an inferiority complex as a boy. I got in high school and... I was not tall enough for basketball. I was not big enough for football. I was a nobody. And all the girls, they went after the athletes, was my opinion. And so I just, like I was a nobody and not going to amount to anything. Well, Coach Sutton, the principal, was a Golden Gloves boxer. And he started Franklin's first boxing team. And you go by weight. And I thought, this may be my salvation. So I'm going to come out for boxing. Well, they scheduled me two fights. And the first one, I looked across the ring while they were putting tape on my hands and putting gloves on. And I said, Coach, I can't beat him. I've seen him beat up guys in and out of the ring. And guess what? Sure enough, I set my vision right then in defeat. I thought negative. And sure enough, he beat me to a pulp. Well, they already had scheduled me for the second fight, or I would have quit my career in boxing right there. Mm-hmm. But as it was 2 weeks later, and this is very important, what I'm about to say. We need to praise people, especially young people. Coach Sutton said something that changed my life. He said, Calvin, you had a good left jab. Well, I don't even remember hitting the guy, but I kept seeing. I had that mental picture, that's important, seeing myself left jabbing that my opponent. You had a good left jab. I kept seeing and saying to myself for 2 weeks that. Yeah. And so I went to our next fight, and that was going to be my last fight because I was ready to quit. Well, I looked across the ring. I'd never seen this guy before. So you get a point for every time you hit your opponent. Well, I hit him more times than he hit me. I won the fight. Mm. And then we came to find out he was a greater fighter than the guy that beat me to begin with. And when he heard that I had never won a fight, he challenged me for a rematch. Well, I thought, I beat him once, I can beat him again. And sure enough, I did. So that taught me some lessons. The image, the self-image you have is so important, especially young people. It was one of the most important things I learned.
That's a good time to have it. Too,
I've got a story from the book which you have read, but I don't know if you know yours and your mother's relation to it. It's what I call my porta potty story.
Oh, I love that story. Yes,
it's a little off topic, but
share.
But
please.
I feel led to share it anyway.
Sure.
It was when I was going through, I was about halfway through my cancer journey then. I was I was so determined that I would be healed naturally, either naturally or supernaturally. I wished that some miracle would happen, and I was doing all kinds of alternative treatments. I was feeling so good in so many ways. And you came to town to for the memorial service for your mother. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't know if you knew that this story happened the day that we dropped you off for the memorial service, and then I had to go to another event with our foreign exchange student. And that was where the story took place. It was in a park, and I had to go to the restroom, so I found a porta potty. And it was a little chilly for me that day, and as I stood in there trying to kind of warm myself, I was doing what Calvin often talks about, you know, being grateful. And so I was just being grateful for my family and friends, and I said, thank you for the healing of my body. And as I said that, this message just, it feels like, I just call it a download, it just downloaded into my spirit, and it said, pray not for the healing of your body, but rather for the healing of your soul. For your body is temporary, and your soul is eternal. And when your soul is healed, your body will follow. Now, it just blew me away, this message did. Because I had been putting all this emphasis on my body. You know, eating right, taking all these pills, and doing all these treatments and everything. And I went out of there, and I was changed. Because from that moment forward, I began doing things that were what I considered to be more beneficial to my soul. And I started kind of digging deep to find out the wounds of my soul, to, you know, to heal those things. And I came up with so much stuff that was in there, you know. It's like peeling back an onion always to go through the wounds of your soul. You think you deal with it, you cry about something, and then years later you find out you're still not over that hurt. So I believe that was a great turning point in part of my soul healing. And I just wanted to share that it did happen when you were there.
I actually remember you'd shared that story with me that night. And I remembered it well. I remembered it, yeah. And then when I read it in the book, it reminded me of the date.
Yeah, of course I would.
May 11th, 2009. I was like, oh, yeah. I do. I remember that quite well. And you know what's really interesting? Both of your stories are directly connected to consciousness and personal understanding of who you are. I just find that fascinating. Calvin, with the list that goes on, you know, for hours of incredible accomplishments, and the one to share is the place where he finds peace in himself and finds his power in himself, and that he can create who what he's meant to be. And so sharing a meaning of understanding that she's not her body, that she is her soul, and that the work to do here is to be cultivating the lessons and the healing of soul. I find that really quite fascinating. Both of you. Cheers to both of you. Wow. And would you like to share with the listeners information about how they can get a hold of this incredible book that I just cannot recommend enough?
Yes, I would, Jamil. Our book can be purchased on our website. At this time, that's the only place you can get it, unless you live in the Nashville area. But our website is www.flyinghighbook.com. And we would be honored if you would get a copy and share it with your friends. It makes a great, I think it makes a great Christmas present, because it's a good way to start out 2012.
I would quite agree, actually. I would quite agree. I very interested in how we're going to approach loving ourselves. It's really been the big message in my heart of late. And now we are at the hour. We have space to carry on our conversation, but I want to respect our previous commitment and offer it to you all. Would you like to continue sharing a little bit more, or shall we wrap it up?
Well, I've got a house concert as soon as I leave here, so I'm for wrapping up.
Okay.
And we're going to make music tonight.
Yay! At your house?
Yes. We got about 40 people coming to the house.
Oh, wow. That sounds
exciting.
Like
my first house concert.
Oh, congratulations, though. Wow. Good for you. Well, give my love to the family and all of that, please.
Will do.
All right. And Calvin, would you like to send us out with a story, a sharing of some really fun story that I know you have in there somewhere?
The thing that comes to my mind is that something I think the listeners might want to know is that every time you set a goal and you have faith and belief, they call it the law of attraction. Something happens. There is that power greater than we are that we can tap into. And that's so important that it goes beyond our human consciousness. It call it God or whatever you want to, but when you set a goal, then automatically people call you. You'll see something in the paper. It's called the law of attraction here, but you can have answers come to you that you would not have if you didn't have a positive attitude. This is one of the most important things that I have learned in my business career, in my developing projects and so forth. It's in the Bible where two or more are gathered together in my name, there I will be also. When you've got two or three people working together, then miracles can take place. It's like a third or fourth person shows up. And it's hard for me I just can't get over how these little miracles take place in my life. It's like the people show up at the right time. When this bank closes its door on me, then another one opens. And I hear my dog hollering for me. Yeah, he's outside.
Well,
and
thank
I wanted
you.
To tell you, Stowe was afraid of heights. And Stowe, would you tell them, what did you end up doing, one of the greatest victories you had, and what was on the back of the boat when you came down from this sailing?
Well, I went, I was out in Tahoe last year for a wedding, and I saw some parasailers out there, and I thought, I'm going to do that, I think. And so I summoned the courage, and I went down to the beach, and I had to. It turned out that I wasn't heavy enough to do it by myself. So my children, who were also afraid of heights, somehow summed up the courage to do it with me, and we all three went up. And when I came down on the back of the boat, landed on the transom, it was just unbelievable to me to see the word "flying high."
What a coincidence.
Yeah. Coincidence?
Yeah.
I think not.
There's a lot of coincidences happen when you get into that mode. Coincidences and little miracles that can take place.
That's beautiful. I love that story. And that's also in the book. And that is absolutely true. It is true. I believe that miracles, coincidences, this is normal. This is what happens when we live in love and truly claim our voices and who we are. And so I really want to thank both of you with my whole heart for coming on and sharing your story with us. And I want to wish you all the best and encourage all the listeners to check out the book, Flying High. You can find out more information at flyinghighbook.com. And I am Jamil Gramps, This has been the Alchemy of Light broadcast, and we'll pass it back to both of you one more time for final goodbyes, and we'll close it here.
Thank you, and appreciate your generosity in having us on.
Yes, thanks, Jamil. Blessings to you.
Thank you as well. Okay, good night to everybody. We'll see you in a fortnight.